and he says, Arami Oyvei Dovi. Yeah, that my father, he goes back to the history of Lavan and such, and we were in Mitzrayim and it was terrible, and we say these psukim in Haggadah on Pesach night, so we all know the psukim. The Mitzrayim did bad things to us and they afflicted us, and then came the Yeshua. So the Mefarshim ask a kasha, Vayoreyu oisonu hamitzrim, vayanunu. Yeah, grammatically, it doesn't actually go right. Why? Nor does the word go right either, go grammatically either right, yeah? But it's grammatically incorrect. Vayoreyu, right, the word to do bad to somebody else is followed by a lamed, lonu. Yeah, it should be vayoreyu lonu hamitzrim. Yeah, when Moshe Rabbeinu came back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his complaints against HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you sent me to Paro and now things got worse, he said to the Roshan, Loma Harioso, why did you do bad? Lo'om hazeh. So you see that Harioso, the verb doing bad, is followed by a lamed, Lo'om hazeh. And then he says about Paroi, Umeoz bosi el Paroi, the Dabe Bishmecho, that from the time that I started speaking to Paroi about you, Heira, he has done bad things, Lo'om hazeh, to this people. So therefore, Heira or Vayoreyu should be followed by Lonu and not Vayoreyu Oisonu Hamitzrim. So what does it mean Vayoreyu Oisonu? So I can't remember which one it is. I usually say it over by the Seder because I think it's a nice thought. But what the Mefarshim says is as follows. Dudi Rosenberg is wont to tell a story about his Shver, Reb Chaskel Besser. He's told it here from this pulpit before. About Reb Chaskel Besser. He says there was a Yid, a war survivor, somebody who survived the Shoah, and was living, an old man, living by himself, miserable, sad, lost his entire family, living in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. He didn't have a penny to his name, and he struggled from week to week, etc. He used to come to shul, but he was basically an old, broken man. He'd lost everything in the war, he'd lost his future, he'd lost his family, he'd lost everything. And he was a broken man, and one day he got a summons to attend the New York State court, I don't know which it was, the equivalent of the county court in New York. Why? The summons came from the German embassy saying that we have been paying you Wiedergutmachung, we've been paying you compensation, as the Germans do, to Holocaust survivors, and we've discovered that you've been swindling us. We've discovered that you've been claiming far more, you told lies on your application form, and we've been paying you far more money than you're entitled to. And this has been going on for some time, and we'd now like our money back. And they made a ganze cheshbon of how much he had taken in excess of what he was entitled to, and in excess of what he was entitled to, and they summoned him for this huge amount of money, which he didn't have. He didn't know what to do, and he ended up going to the Agudas Yisrael, to their sort of community services, and he asked them for advice. So they said, what's the situation? And he said, the truth is that they're right. I exaggerated the story of what happened to me during the war, and what I lost, and what I haven't got here, and my liabilities here, and my dependence here. He admitted that he swindled the... He owes them the money, and he doesn't have l'chorah the defense, nor does he have the money, in which case he's going to end up in prison. So the community services there handed it over to Reb Chaskel Besser, Dudi Shver Zichron Levrocha. He was a big Askan, and quite a clever man, and this was a sort of challenge that he probably enjoyed. And he made an appointment to meet up with the officers in the German embassy who were responsible for this summons. And he sat down with them, and he said to... It was a lady, actually. Doctor, I've forgotten her name. Doctor somebody or other. She was a lady. And he sat with her, and he said to her, do you know anything about this person? This person that you've summoned, from whom you're claiming the money, do you know anything about him? So she said, yes, I know a lot about him. What do you know about him? There, he's stolen, and he's swindled, and he's claimed a lot of money, and we've paid him a lot of money. But do you know anything about him? About his personality, or his circumstances, or his history? Do you know? So, no, she doesn't know. It's just the name on the form. So he said, let me tell you something about him. So let me tell you his history briefly. He said, this man was a young man. He was 14 years old during the war. He lived in a town called Pshemishal, and he was rounded up by the Nazis. He was rounded up by the Nazis, and he was sent to concentration camp. So when he arrived in the concentration camp, and he was a little boy, I mean, he was 14 years old, an innocent yeshiva bocher, knew nothing about anything. And he arrives at the concentration camp, and there are all these heftlings, all these slaves who were running around, and they were helping the people get out the trout and with the luggage and the dead bodies, etc., etc. Busy, busy, busy. And then they stood them all in line in order to have for the selection. Said, and one of these slaves came up to him and nudged him. Yeah, and he said, "Tell them you're 16." Zug zat de besetzen you alt. So he got to the front of the queue, and he wasn't that big, and he stood as tall as he could. And the officer says to him, "How old are you?" And he says, 16. And he looks at him and says, 16? And he said, "Yeah, 16. Okay. And he allowed him to go and live. So he sent him over to the right-hand side, and he ended up in a barracks. They're all hanging around in the barracks, and there's a capo there, a Jewish capo, who is in charge of that particular barracks. And he sees this yeshiva bocher, and he goes up to the yeshiva bocher, and he says to him, said, when the officer comes in, he's going to ask all of you whether or not you have any trades, whether or not you have any skills, things that they can use, that they can put you to work. So he said, tell them that you're a cook. If you tell them you're a chef, then they'll give you a job in the kitchen. He says, the best job. So the officer came in afterwards, lined them all up, asked them what their skills and trades are, and he said, I'm a chef, I'm a cook. So he said, you're a cook? So he said, yes. He said, I was in the yeshiva and I used to cook for 250 people. Yeah. So he said, fine. They gave him a job in the kitchen. He said, as a result of that, he ended up in the kitchen working, which meant that from time to time, he was able to steal some scraps of food, which kept him alive. And from time to time, he was able to steal a bit of food, which he could give to other people. And he helped other people to stay alive, and he survived the war. He said, this bocher, said Rav Chaskel Besser, was an innocent yeshiva bocher. He said, he probably never told a lie in his life. He said, but you, the Germans, taught him to be a swindler. You taught him to be a liar. Right? If not for the fact he learned from you, if not for the fact that he lied about his age, if not for the fact that he lied about his skills and his trades, and if not by the fact that he was able to steal in the kitchen, then he wouldn't be alive, and maybe some other people wouldn't be alive either. Said, this innocent yeshiva bocher learnt in the German school exactly how to be a liar and a cheat and a swindler and a thief. Said, so if he did it back, if he came to New York and he's desperate and he hasn't got what to eat and he's living in some dingy apartment in Manhattan, yeah, in the lower side of Manhattan, not Manhattan, Manhattan as is this day, yeah? He said, and the man is miserable and he's desperate, he knows. How do you survive? You cheat. How do you survive? You tell lies. How do you survive? You fill out the form and you say whatever's necessary. That's survival. You learned how to be a crook and a cheat from you. So you can't now blame him. You can't now summons him. You can't now attack him for being being a thief. Said he learned it from you. He's your Talmud. That's how he did it. Yeah. And Taka, they let him off. And there was another story that they tell over from Reb Naftulcher. Reb Shlomo Halberstam's son, the Bobov Rebbe's son, that when he first came to New York, he had a shtiebel in the Lower East Side, and he had a kehillah of old men like this, people who were broken people, people who had nothing left in life, who'd lost everything, etc. They weren't the biggest Talmidei Chachamim, and they weren't the biggest Shomrei, Torah Mitzvahs. But they came to shul, and they met once a week, and they had some herring together, etc. And there was one of these Yidden, his name was, I've forgotten what his name was, I think Moshe, but I can't remember exactly. Yeah, and he was a good Baal Tefillah. He was a good Baal Tefillah amongst all the people there, and therefore he used to daven Shacharis every Shabbos morning. Every Shabbos morning, and they used to look forward to it, because he really was a good Baal Tefillah, and they enjoyed his davening. So every week he was there, and every week he would daven Shacharis. And one Shabbos, he's not there. Like the speaker of today. One Shabbos, he's not in shul. And Reb Shlomo looks around, they're coming up to Shoichinat, and the Gabba looks, can't find him, so he has to send somebody else there. So Reb Shlomo called over his son, Reb Naftulcher, and he said, I don't know where this Moshe is, but it's a bit worrying, so I'd like you to go out to his apartment and check out on him, see if he's okay. Maybe he's not well, maybe Chas V'Shalom, something's happened to him. Now, Betulchuk listened to his father, and he went out. He knew where this Moshe lived, and he's on his way to the apartment, and he sees Reb Moshe sitting on a bench, on the street, and reading a newspaper, and smoking. And now he made sure that the guy didn't notice him, that Reb Moshe didn't see him, but he turned around straight away. He went back to the shul, and he didn't know what to tell his father, so he sort of stood at the back of the shul, didn't know what to say to his father. But his father called him over, and he said, "No," he said, did you go to ask Reb Moshe to find him?" So he said, "Yes." He said, "Did you find him?" "Yeah." "And?" "Well, I'd rather not say." "So no, I'll drive it, just tell me." She said, "He's sitting on a park bench." "Yeah, no, nish gefährlich." "He's reading a newspaper." "Nish gefährlich," said there. "And Tati says it's Shabbos and he's smoking." So his father shouted at him. He said, "He is smoking? He's not smoking. The Germans are smoking." He said, "The Deutschen reichen." He said, "The Germans are smoking. They're the ones who made him into a bag of nerves. They're the ones who brought him to New York. They're the ones who caused the loss of his entire lifetime and made him into a wreck." He said, "And that's why he smokes." So he said, "He's not smoking. The Germans are smoking." Just one final story, and then we'll go back to Ve'arei Asonu. Yeah. So one final thing, and that is, Elie Wiesel was asked, yeah, when you were in Buchenwald, what was the lowest point, the lowest moral moment of your life during the period when you were in concentration camp? And he thought about it and he said, "I'll tell you." He said, we went to work and we worked very hard. He said, afterwards we were marched back to the camp. He said, and I was with my father together. So we marched back to the camp and they dished out the supper that we got. Yeah, we got a plate of gruel, which we ate. So then we were given a lump of bread, and Arminig was that, you know, we ate part of the bread, and a bit of the bread you kept for later. You knew that later on the hunger would come back and start gnawing at you, and therefore we kept a little bit of bread for later, he said. So I had my piece of bread in my hand, and my father had a piece of bread in his hand, and we were walking together back to the barracks after the supper, and I was thinking to myself, if only my father would drop dead, I'd have another piece of bread. He said, that was the lowest moral level. The lowest point that I got to in the entire period was when I was wishing that my father should die in order that I could get another piece of bread. It says there are two things. It says there are things that the Mitzrim did to us. But they also, Vayoreyu Oisonu HaMitzrim, doesn't mean just that they did bad things to us. Vayoreyu Oisonu means they made us into bad people. They're the ones who try to take away our dignity and to make us desperate. And they knew that Bnei Yisrael are Achmonim, Baishonim, Goim Lechasodim. They're sympathetic people, they're kind people, they're people who think about others. And they made us into savages. They wanted us to be savages. Man eats man and dog eats dog. That people should be desperate to the extent, yeah, that they lose their tzura, that we lose our Jewish character. He said, that's what they tried. Vayoreyu oisonu hamitzrim. They made us into bad people. And that was deliberate. They wanted to do that. It gave them pleasure to know. Part of the program is that these become people without identities, people without names, only numbers, and all they can think about. My father, Zichrono Livracha, told me he was in the Siberian camp for 3.5 years. He said, you think you get used to being hungry. Said, you don't get used to being hungry. You think, oh, my, you know, people are on the diet. Say, yeah, your stomach shrinks and then you don't become, you know, interested in eating anymore. He said, when you are starving, he said, all you think about all day, every day, from the beginning till the end, even years later, all you think about is the next crust. All you think about is the next meal, what are we going to get to eat when we get back? And your stomach bothers you the whole time. So he said, Vayoreyu oisonu hamitzrim means that the mitzrim did us, made us into bad people. Last week, I was lining Parshas Chukas, and it says there that Bnei Yisrael arrived at the border of Edom. The Bnei Yisrael arrived at the border of Edom. We needed you. Where were you when we needed you? Yeah. The Bnei Yisrael arrived at the border of Edom, and Moshe Rabbeinu sent a message to Edom saying, "Koyoma Achicha Yisrael," and he tells him the whole story. He's asking for permission to cross through the land, not to have to go the long way round, but to be able to pass through the land of Edom. And he tells in the story that we were in Mitzrayim, etc., etc. And then it says, Vayoreyu lonu hamitzrim. So we've got Vayoreyu oisonu in Parshas Kisavoy, and Vayoreyu lonu hamitzrim. Now we learned just now, Vayoreyu oisonu means they made us into bad people. Vayoreyu lonu means that they did bad things to us. The enslavement and the punishments and all the terrible things that they did. So you've got both Vayoreyu lonu and you've got the Vayoreyu oisonu. And I think it fits in very well in each particular case. When you think about it like this, I was just thinking it through, trying, because at the end of the day, in one case the Torah says lonu, and the other place the Torah says oisonu, and we need to think about what's the difference between them. Why should it be different? Why should the Torah dafka use lonu here and oisonu here? And the answer, pashtus, would be as follows, that in the case of Edom, when Moshe Rabbeinu is standing at the border of Edom, and he's telling the king of Edom, it doesn't say his name, but it says the Melech Edom, and he's telling him the story that we are refugees. We're people who suffer terribly in Mitzrayim. And we've been traveling 40 years through a midbar. And we're about to come to the promised land. And we need to go through your land. We need to pass through rather than have to go through the long way around. He's asking for sympathy. He's asking the king of Edom, he's asking him for sympathy. He's trying that the king of Edom should empathize with them. And so he's saying, we've suffered enough. We've suffered a lot. And therefore now make it a bit easier for us and let us pass through your land. We'll behave ourselves and we won't spoil anything and we won't steal anything, etc. So there he's describing the pain and the suffering that we suffered in Mitzrayim, yeah, which brought us eventually to this point where we have to pass through your land. So there he's speaking about Vayoreyu lonu. It's nothing to do with our character. It's nothing to do with what happened to the Yiddish neshama, to the Yiddish character. It's to do simply with the suffering that we suffered, and then 40 years in the midbar. Now we're finally coming to our homeland, and we want to pass through your land. So therefore there he said, Vayoreyu lonu hamitzrim, and he describes the terrible things that the mitzrim actually did physically to the Bnei Yisrael. But when a Yid comes to the Beis HaMikdosh, and he's bringing Bikurim, what's he saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam? He's saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam that we were in Mitzrayim. Yeah, we had first of all a whole problem with Lavan, and then we were in Mitzrayim. Vayoreyu oisonu hamitzrim. The goyim tried to make us into bad people. The goyim were the one, the mitzrim, and subsequently we found the same thing with the Romans, and subsequently with the Nazis. The shitta has always been to try and take away our Yiddish tzura, to take away our Yiddish character, that we are rachmonim b'nei rachmonim, that we're people who care, we're people who appreciate, we're people who care about others. And now a person's coming to the Beis HaMikdosh, and he's saying, V'ato hinei hevesi, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm expressing my thanks to you, and I'm thanking you, Ribbono Shel Olam. And then it follows on afterwards with the Parsha B'yom Ma'aseres, where the person says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, in second Parsha, in Parshas Kisavoy, it follows B'yom Ma'aseres, Ribbono Shel Olam, I've given the Levi, I've given the Kohen, I've given the Yosem, I've given the Almona, I've given the Geirim, etc., etc. What he's saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam is, we went through terrible times. Throughout history, in every generation, Vayoreyu, besides Lonu Hamitzrim, besides the terrible physical things that they've done to us, Vayoreyu Oisonu Hamitzrim, they've tried to ruin our character. They've tried to ruin the Tzura of a Yiddish Neshama. They've tried to take away and to make us into savages and to make us into desperate people and to lose that. Ribbono Shel Olam, I want you to know I'm here, I'm in the Beis HaMikdosh, and I'm expressing my appreciation to you, Ribbono Shel Olam. And I'm saying thank you very much. Ich bin geblieben a Yid. We're Yidden and we're still Shomer Torah Mitzvahs and we're people who care for others and we've got an agricultural society in which we give to the Kohen and to the Levi and to the Oni and to the Yosem and to the Almona. And the goyim did not succeed with their Vayoreyu lonu, and they didn't succeed with their Vayoreyu oisonu. Okay, that's what I had in mind to not to say today, but all we can finish off is with a tefillah. Today we're commemorating. Today we're commemorating the destruction of the second stage in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdosh, Hufko Ir. And Mir Tashem, we should be Zoichem, Mir Tashem Bekorov, that we should be able to bring Bikurim and Vidui Maestros and all the other things that we did in the Beis HaMikdosh, B'mher V'meinu.